Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. I would like to start off by correcting the mistake I made last week. Of all people, being here in England, I made the mistake of saying that our Remembrance Day, which was held last Friday, where we have a short period of silence in respect of all those fallen ones in the last wars, I said that it was for 1 minute, and I made a mistake, it was 2 minutes. So how I managed that, I'm not sure. I think I also might have said that the initial reports I saw about the meeting with George Bush, where he was slapped across the face by one of the people present, was attributable to the Cloak and Dagger site. I find now that the transcript came from the Al Franken show. But there you are, it may have circulated through other sites, but I have to put that to rights. And I would like to go straight away to my top message of the week, the one I really look forward to reading, and that is the update by Sheldon Neidel for the Spiritual Hierarchy and the Galactic Federation, which comes out every Tuesday. He started off by saying that if you look carefully around the world, you will see the empire in the making of the Dark Cabal, breaking out in hairline cracks. Look closer yet, and the deep fissures behind the cracks become apparent. The message went on to say that the forces of the dark realize the fate that awaits them. But in defiance of their former masters, these minions still seek world domination and the means to strengthen their control over you. Now, I take that reference there to mean, when they talk of their former masters, the Anunnaki, who I've always understood were the force behind the Dark Cabal. And it has been said in one of Sheldon Neidel's messages that came through a lot earlier that they have now turned to the light. So, for someone who perhaps is hearing that for the first time, you need to know what the inference is behind that statement. The message goes on to say that the invincible energies of light have greatly helped to manifest the most fitting reward, your coming prosperity and new reality. Again, as I often mention when I see that type of reference, that clearly refers to all of the benefits that are coming via Nasara and First Contact. We're asked to redirect our energies by visualizing exactly how we would wish the next episode of this drama to play out, saying that heaven has staged a great drama and the major players have done a fine job in moving events to this pivotal point in the production. What you are about to see is the disintegration of the dark and the gracious flowering of a new world. It goes on to say that the changes in government and the distribution of the prosperity fund are only the barest of beginnings. First Contact and all that it brings are the main goals of this play. All else is mere window dressing. The world, you know, is imploding. Those who rule and inform you try hard to conceal this fact. But the truth, like the snowball that precipitates an avalanche, will soon engulf them. The message goes on to say, at this time it is important to recognize the essential role of First Contact. First Contact transforms your governance, your prosperity, your religion, and above all, it redefines your self-image. The immensity of these implications may be beyond the comprehension of most. For example, the Second Coming event goes well beyond the purview of your present theology. This event is to prepare you for nothing less than your reunion with heaven in the joy of full consciousness. This mass ascension has nothing to do scriptures. First contact and the return to full consciousness is an invitation to join directly with heaven to reveal the divine plan. It further on, the message says, only as the dark played its trump cards could the light burst in with the scenario you now see before you. As the ring of indictments grows, the culpability of this cabal's power base likewise increases. This leads to another president under siege, fighting desperately to survive. It also brings the entire American political system under a full scrutiny. Many forces presently hidden are ready to burst forth to create a new world once the merciless shackles of this last cabal are dismantled. Thus, there are many things afoot that you do not know of. These covert elements are the light's most powerful trump cards. For millennia, the light has prepared for this day, and the dark, now lacking the cleverness and wisdom of their former off-world masters, made fatal mistakes. Its miscalculations produced its present disarray and set the stage for our arrival upon your beautiful shores. First contact is to take place after this regime is gone, and the temporary government restores your unalienable rights and brings back the true American Constitution. And near the end of the message, it is said, we cannot as yet do more, as the complexities and full nuances of this adventure would require many lectures to bring you fully abreast. In fact, these brief missives are barely adequate to present you with even a thumbnail sketch. Finally, in concluding, the message says, we are determined to fulfill the preconditions for first contact. Your world is being prepared for a great transformation in consciousness. This program is set forth by the divine plan and can therefore have only one possible outcome, success. The plan includes us, meaning that everything we read about has a firm place for the inclusion of our space family. And they say that this gift which we are being given from heaven will free us from our current bondage and restore our unalienable rights and return us to the heavenly joys of full consciousness. I think yet again that's a wonderful message that we've received, and I'm sure anyone who reads these regularly is like me. I really look forward to seeing what they want to say next. Now I'd like to come just for a brief summary of the messages I have received myself. And on Monday I had Elar, who is an Arcturian, come through, and he confirmed that the Earth is parting company from us, and that those who will remain are those of the third dimensional mindset. Others who understand the changes and move forwards towards ascension, which is taking place now, will move into a new vibration, eventually along with Mother Earth. There was a part of the message where reference was made to colour and our auras, and there was a very basic explanation for the four major colours, red being for physical energy, yellow for mental, green in service to others, and blue for wisdom. And it was mentioned that Jesus carried the rosy pink ray of love. It was mentioned of how some people have the ability to feel these auric emanations, and how people subconsciously often choose colours that are harmonious with their own, or perhaps even choose colours which they need to boost their energies. There was mention of how colour has been used or healing for eons of time, and how in the higher dimension the colours are so much brighter and indeed exceed the range of colours that we presently know. Pilar concluded that message by speaking of the beauty of Arcturus and how he wished he could take us there so that we could experience just that. On Tuesday, I had Saint Germain, and the subject of his message was us. And he said, the most important person is you. And he spoke of our freedom, which we enjoyed, but reminded us that we still have to answer to universal law. He said that those who followed man's idea of God found that they had a God who was to be feared, a God tainted by attributing warlike actions to God. He went on to say that you have been taught that you were sinful and unworthy, and not taught that you are God's created in his image, but instead that you believe God is made in man's image. He went on to speak of organized religion and how the rigid discipline and control has really held people back. And he said, finding your truth is something you will find by going within, and you need to live your total understanding of what it is to become godlike. I finally mention his comment about our God spark, and he said that it is indestructible and remains forever. It is your permanent link with all that is. On Wednesday, I again had Saint Germain come through, and he was mentioning about how much time we spend out of the body or away from Earth. And of course, we spend some time off-world when we are between incarnation. And when we are on the Earth, we also spend quite some time off it when we go out of the body during our sleep time. It is worth mentioning there that few people probably have any idea that they move out of the body during the sleep time, but Spirit assures that this is the case. The one exception is that if you have absolutely no belief in that type of thing, it is said that your finer body simply moves out and positions itself slightly above the physical body, and there it stays. Saint Germain mentioned that we have reached a great turning point in this particular period of time, and as we can see from the outer happenings, we can expect events to go speeding forward and give us those changes that we have been looking forward to. He said, lift yourself above the reactions of those who are responding to what is happening with anger, and try to keep aside, see what is happening, but do not become involved. By doing so, you can inadvertently add to the negative energies that are being created. Light workers should be trying to create a peaceful atmosphere and helping calm others down. He says, reassess your position if you have fixed attitudes, and he mentioned that enlightened ones are now emerging from the shadows to take over where the dark have been removed. He was saying that a lot of this is possible because we are guided all the time, and our guides do their best to ensure that we do take every opportunity to follow our path. He said that time for first contact and Nasara is now, and it should blossom, and we will see the benefits which we already know of. So, that is all I will take from that message. Finally, I refer to my message on Thursday, which was from Diane, and she is also a member of the Galactic Federation. And she said that many civilizations have come and gone, many without trace. And she said that the Earth in our time was intended to be a showcase by bringing a wonderful collection and variety of plants and fauna, and that it took millions of years initially to seed the planet ready for the advent of man. She mentioned that we have faced the challenge to complete the cycle without resorting to man's complete destruction of the planet. Something that she mentioned happened before, and it is hoped that unlike the destruction of Atlantean times, when the whole continent was submerged, we will have learned our lesson, and this time end the cycle in the light. And of course we have been told that we are well on that path to achieving that particular ending. She said that the last circle is a challenge to see if we have learned those lessons of the past, and it is applicable really to our whole journey through the cycle of duality. She said that how we ascend and when we ascend depends on how we respond to the challenges that we face. So I will end there on reviewing my own messages. And what I would like to come to now is what I call my UFO section. I said last week that I would have a look back in some old Flying Saucer review magazines that I had and try and pick up one or two interesting UFO sightings. Strangely enough, I went back to the oldest one I have, which goes back to 1961, and I took a quick scan through and actually found a very interesting story that is not about UFOs as such, but possibly about ETs. But I will come to that one in the ET section. I mentioned the one I spoke about in my last program, which was the Battle of LA, the UFO that was caught in searchlight beams in 1942. And I couldn't help thinking what a strange coincidence it was that, having mentioned that last week, and believing that I had never heard of it before, I played myself a videotape of a program called UFO Chronicles, which came from the States. It was hosted by someone called Lee Majors. And lo and behold, in the course of that program, they actually mentioned this particular sighting. Now, there wasn't a lot about it, and one would be forgiven for having not remembered, but it's one of these strange coincidences that seems to crop up. I have to mention that program appears to have been made in the perhaps late 90s, but I was also quite pleasantly surprised to see Sheldon Neidel and I believe it was his wife Colleen both interviewed and shown on that tape. So yeah, that was quite something. That was very interesting. What I would like to go on to is a reference I heard in a program to someone called Jose Escamillo. And it was said that he, being a film producer, had set out as a speciality to film UFOs. And apparently, in November 1994, he actually filmed 32 60-foot diameter triangular spacecraft, which he said had domes on the top. And I have no other detail, unfortunately. I checked on the internet, but his name doesn't come up. But apparently, he used to film some 12 hours a day. And I cannot help think that somewhere there must be a fantastic lot of film available. I recall in this extract, he mentioned that he had filmed numerous UFOs. And in this part on the video, there was a short extract of some of the UFOs he had seen. So that was a shame. But I thought because of the sheer number of UFOs, that one was worth mentioning. There was a little bit of a flap of a kind on the internet in the last week because someone looked at the full moon and to the side of it, they were convinced they had seen a satellite. And there were one or two emails going backwards and forwards trying to work out what it was. And someone said it was Mars, and somebody else said, no, it wasn't, it was the wrong colour. And they said that this object was moving backwards and forwards, which, of course, Mars would not. So there was a little bit of a flurry there. And someone called Jana said that she had been watching the full moon for 2 hours. And at a certain time, she said, there is a ship. And she said, no doubt about it. And she thought this was a genuine sighting. You don't get too many, but there you are. That's one that's very current. I received an email in the last week from a site called Love Is All. And it covered a report about a massive UFO fleet over the UK on the evening of Thursday, October 20th. Now, I haven't read anything in the press about that, but then our press, I think, is also very reluctant to give you too many reports, and I think there is also a gagging order up to a certain point. But this particular fleet was alleged to be something well over 50 UFOs, and quite incredibly, the person sighting it took a photograph with a small camera attached to his mobile phone. And this photograph was shown in the email, and as you probably know, the quality isn't always too good. But the craft either looked like triangular ones, or from the angle they're taken, they may be simply domed craft. But I thought that, again, was interesting because of the numbers cited. I think it's only in comparatively recent years that we've had these mass sightings. And of course, Mexico City is one place that is famed for seeing large numbers of them. This particular sighting happened when somebody called Gene Harley, yes, was driving along with a group of friends along the M25 motorway, which is the ring road motorway around London. And they saw it together, so he stopped and got his digital camera out, which for some unknown reason decided not to work, which in the report mentioned that this is a classic phenomenon related to UFO encounters, which I certainly agree is the case. But he had his mobile phone with him and this small camera, and this is how he came to took the photos. He said this happened at 9:30 on the evening of October 20th this year. And he said they were brightly illuminated in a scattered, although fixed, formation. And it took only about 4 minutes for the objects to pass overhead and out of sight. But the strange thing was, Gene said that none of the drivers on the motorway seemed to spot the giant fleet which was moving above them. So there you are. He asked the question whether any of the pilots reported this incident to Heathrow or Gatwick airports, which really aren't too far away from that area. And he also contacted the local media in his area, including the BBC and local news outlets. However, but none of them seem interested in his story. So, again, that's pretty odd, isn't it? Maybe they doubted the sighting because of the numbers, perhaps, but I thought this was a very interesting one. And one of the features that he said struck him from the footage that he made is that each light seemed to be flashing individually between white and red. So there are. It said if you want to see the footage, you can find it by going to ufos-aliens.co.uk. Right, that's ufos-aliens.co.uk. So it's probably worth a look at, because in some ways that's probably quite a unique sighting. Now, Linda Howe is, I think it can be safely said, noted as one of these investigative people who manages to pick up lots of different UFO reports. And there was a message going around, and apparently a report on this week's Dreamland, which was described as being absolutely stunning. It said that it turns out that she has been quietly researching a UFO crash and burial of an object that took place near Garrison, Utah on May the 20th, 1953. And the crash left a gigantic triangular scar in the earth that is 2 miles long and 1 mile wide. And apparently she kept her work secret and not only talked to local witnesses and personnel who were aware of the activity at the site, but she visited some and made some remarkable discoveries. She said that near the huge crash site is the Desert Research Experimental Station, which is now abandoned. And although the buildings at the station are old and run down with peel and paint, there are brand new doors, new locks and new padlocks. And she said, but why? So it's protecting this seemingly long abandoned site. And apparently in the report, it is said you will hear one Air Force pilot say in Linda's report that what left that gigantic triangle in the earth was not of this world. And you will hear her tell about secret efforts on the part of researchers to locate debris in the area. So apparently, if you go to earthfiles.com, you can find the full report. Certainly sounds extremely interesting. Now, when I come to my ET bit, I'm going to introduce the article that I found in the Flying Saucer Review of 1961. And it was written by an American called Alan W. Edwards, who at that time was living in California. And he spoke of events that took place during the year 1946 and the early part of 1947. And he said he met some things which he would not necessarily claim to have come from outer space. He said because the people who he met did not identify themselves. So he said, I can only present the facts as I remember them and let the reader form his own conclusions. But he said, I have placed these people in the category of extraordinary due to the unusual powers they possess. He said that shortly before he was discharged from the army in June 1946, he was in hospital suffering from a minor ailment. And at some stage, when he had had breakfast and it was over, he wandered back to the main ward and he could see something in the distance as he sat on the floor. He could see the hallway leading to private rooms and another door to the dining area. And on a chair between the two doors, a man was sitting. And he said, from that distance, I could immediately see that there was something unusual about him. And he said that was a distance of about 50 feet. And I could see that the coloration of this man's face was startling. I arose and walked the length of the wall to get a closer look. The bed at the end of the room on my left was vacant. And assuming it to be his, I asked him if he minded if I sat on it. He smiled and said, "Go right ahead." So I perched on the edge, and trying not to be too obvious, I studied this amazing man. Never in my life have I seen such beauty, yet there was absolutely nothing feminine about his features. They were perfectly formed. His forehead was extremely high, the fine veins showing faintly through the transparency of the skin at the temples. His blonde hair seemed to glow with an inner light of its own. In fact, his entire head seemed to be radiant, whether from the beauty of his complexion or some mysterious factor I did not know. His eyes were softly blue beneath the pure whiteness of his brow and seemed to me to be filled with great compassion. His nose was perfectly shaped, and the colouring of his cheeks had a freshness and purity that I had never beheld in any human being. The extraordinary height of his forehead amazed me, but the physical characteristics that I found even more unusual was the depth of his head from the forehead to the back. He said that he became aware of a strange sensation. He said, "Somehow I seemed to be in two places at once, as though I was raised up into another dimension. The feeling of well-being was beyond description, almost in the nature of a spiritual experience, and I felt that in some way it was connected with the man seated near me." He said, "I glanced at the bedside table, hoping to get some clue to his identity. On it was a pitcher of water, a tumbler, and a copy of a pocket magazine called Pageant. It was opened at an article titled Easter in Oklahoma." And he said, "Little did I realize at that time how this article was to influence my life after my discharge from the hospital." He said, "A doctor entered the ward and my name was called, bringing me to attention. I was taken into a small office where I was given a thorough physical examination. Later he returned to his room. He said, around midnight I heard a commotion in the hallway outside my door. I got out of bed and cautiously looked out. In the front of me were two attendants struggling with a young lad who had obviously been horribly beaten. I learned that the boy, who could not have been over 18, had been picked up at the PX by the MPs. Apparently he had been involved in a drunken brawl and had got the worst of it. Both eyes were black and swollen shut, and his forehead was badly bruised, but his nose seemed to have suffered the most. It was a bleeding pulp. I returned to my room and tried to sleep, but the groans from the next room kept me awake until, just as day was breaking, they finally stopped, and I drifted off into a restless sleep. Later the next morning, he went to the dining room and sat down at the end of a long table, and the man he had seen the previous day in the ward was seated at the centre of the table to his left. And he said the only vacant place was one next to the blonde man on his left. So I sat down and watched him out of the corners of my eye. Again, I was amazed at the beauty of his head. Then my eyes rested upon a young lad seated at my left, at the bottom of the table. This was the same boy who had been brought in the night before, the one who had been so badly beaten. Yet it couldn't be. There was not a blemish on his face. I leaned over and asked him if he had come in the previous night, and he said, "I must have, but I don't remember anything about it. I was a little drunk and got into a fight at the PX." He said, "Here he sat, apparently happy and well, with no sign of black eyes, the bruised forehead or the smashed nose. I couldn't account for it, and yet somehow I felt strongly that the man seated on my right had been responsible for this miraculous transfiguration. Again, I felt the odd sensation of being in two places at the same time. Was no one else at the table aware of what was taking place? I looked about me at the others. Then I realized that an amazing thing had happened. Each one of the men seated at the table was changed. Glorified is an extravagant word to use, and yet it explains best what I feel had happened to these people. It was as though a grey veil had been lifted off my eyes for the first time, and I saw true beauty of colours. I wondered if they were aware of their strange transfiguration, or whether it was some strange trick of my vision. I felt tears come to my eyes, and I quickly took up my fork and picked up a piece of the pancake on the plate before me. I put it into my mouth and was startled to find that it dissolved and disintegrated seemingly without a trace. At the same time, I had a strong awareness that this food was in some way alive and part of a larger body. This is difficult to explain, and I cannot find words adequately to express it. I knew now that the blonde man seated beside me was responsible for these miracles. I put my fork down and sat quietly, tears streaming down my face. In a few moments, I got up and left the table and went to the privacy of my room. I did not see the blonde man again until after my discharge from the army 6 weeks later, and I was kept in the hospital pending my discharge, and during this period, I experienced a number of strange things. I suppose that they might be termed of a psychic nature, and I was quite unable to explain them or understand their purpose. Along with these, I was plagued by a repetitious dream about concrete. I seemed to be involved or mixing it, pouring it, and even being buried in it. Soon the day of my discharge arrived, and I walked out of the hospital in civilian clothes. One of the first things I did was to purchase the copy of the Pageant magazine and read the article Easter in Oklahoma. It was about the annual pilgrimage to Lawton, a small town in the southern part of the state. Every year at Easter, a pageant is presented by the local townspeople depicting the last days of Christ. Apparently, he went on to write to the Chamber of Commerce of Lawton, requesting literature about the town, and in the end, he decided to move to Lawton, a decision based on nothing more than an article in a pocket magazine. Talking of himself and his wife, he said a few days before we were due to leave, I was walking down the main street of the small town of Petersburg, Virginia, where we had been living during my service in the army. On the other side of the street, walking in the same direction, was a blonde man, the same man who had been in the ward at the hospital. He was accompanied by another man, and both were wearing the uniform of the United States Army. I crossed the street and followed them. The man from the ward also crossed the street, but eventually I caught up with them, a thousand questions on my tongue. I managed to stammer out, "Do you remember me?" He smiled and said, "Yes, you were in the hospital at Camp Lee." I told him we are going to move to Lawton, Oklahoma, and he said, "I come from a small town near Lawton called Cement." Recalling my manners, I introduced myself, and he informed me that his name was Suda. Whether this is correct or not, I do not know. I cannot recall any further conversation. I remember watching him slowly walking away. And as I walked home, I thought of my dreams of concrete and cement, Oklahoma, and wondering what the connection was, if any. We moved to Lawton, and several years later, I returned to Oklahoma and went to the small village of Cement. But no one there ever heard of anyone by the name of Suda, and although I searched the countryside, I did not find any trace of him. In January the following year, I was in Seattle, Washington, and was again sent to hospital, this time with a respiratory ailment. During my stay in the hospital, I became increasingly curious about two attendants. Both were young, one tall and blonde, and the other short and dark. Physically, there was nothing extraordinary about them, but I quickly discovered that both had the ability to read every thought that passed through my mind, an ability which proved quite disconcerting to me. To have a question answered before it is put into words is an intriguing experience, and I must admit that I was quite awed by it. I tried to make myself useful around the ward and help with trays for those who were bedridden. At times, I seemed to be impelled against my own will to do things that would be helpful for those who were sicker than I. I had not had much experience with those who were in pain, and yet I found myself administering to them with expert hands, which did not somehow seem to belong to me. Shortly after my dismissal from hospital, I was impelled, and that is the only word that explains the sensation, to go down to the street from my room in the hotel where I was staying. It was a sharp, clear night with the stars brilliant in the moonless sky. And I had never before seen anything so brilliant as I was drawn to one star which was unusually large. As I stood, it started to expand and gradually grew brighter and brighter until it was about half the size of a full moon. It did not change position, and after a few moments it decreased in brilliance until it was back to its original size. I was startled and perplexed. I had never heard of spaceships or flying saucers, and could only suppose that it was some strange phenomenon that had taken place upon a distant planet or star. I forgot about the incident until some years later, when a friend gave me a copy of a book called Inside the Spaceships by George Adamski. I read it and reread it. Some of the events described by George Adamski rang a bell, and I remembered the man in Camp Lee and the strange lights in the night sky. Shortly after this, I was in Virginia Beach, Virginia, where 9 spaceships maneuvered over the coast one night, while several of us watched. We observed one in the western sky. It appeared every night in the same position, giving us a good opportunity to study it through a telescope. The same year, I was in Puerto Rico, where I observed another unusual phenomena in the night sky. It was a large, glowing white object with a tremendous halo around it, which slowly faded until it disappeared completely, leaving the stars shining brightly in the black sky. While there, I met a man with several others who had seen a large fluorescent object about the size of a DC-6 on the landing strip of an abandoned military airfield on the southern side of the island one evening. It took off while they watched, accelerating quickly and disappeared. I could no longer doubt the existence of these craft, and I am quite sure that they are occupied and directed by intelligent beings. Who they are, I do not know. Have I met 3 of them? Has George Adamski met them? I made a trip to Paloma in Southern California to meet the man who claimed to have not only been in contact with these people, but who claimed to have been inside these ships. I came away impressed, not so much by what he said, but by his gentle manner. Strangely enough, we did not talk about spaceships and space beings, but about spiritual things, his love of nature, and his belief that God exists in all matter, and therefore there is nothing that is not holy. He is a man who has great humility, who believes in the brotherhood of man, and who sees beyond all the turmoil and hostility of our earth today, to a time in the not-too-distant future when there will be truly peace on earth and goodwill towards all men. Now that is where I will end that report, although I've given you a fair bit out of it. What I wanted to say myself is that the description that he gave of the man he met, who called himself Susan, is absolutely the same as the ones given by George Adamski for the Venusians that he met in the desert. And I also have to say that I have a photograph of a painting made by a psychic going back to the 1950s of a Venusian called Yolte. And the description that I've given you matches this spaceman exactly. He was seen psychically and painted standing inside his UFO, which from the porthole on the side that he's standing near, I would guess is one of the scout ships that they use, and that were photographed by George Adamski, and he's wearing what you might call his space outfit. So there you are, that is a very interesting article as far as I'm concerned. Very interesting indeed. And but for the fact it was included in the Flying Saucer Review in the 60s, I doubt very much whether it would have surfaced again today. Right, now I want to get on to general news. Again, it's strange the way some of these things work out. I read an article earlier in the week, I think it was Wednesday, about white phosphorus, and it was said that it was used in the attacks on Fallujah in Baghdad. And the Pentagon were asked about this, and they denied that it was used in Fallujah. They said it was incendiary powder, but I recall reading reports where the few people that were able to see inside Fallujah saw the bodies, and some commented on the very strange manner in which they had been burnt almost to a cinder. Now, today, I heard that the government has admitted that they used white phosphorus, and they said it is legal in the USA. And I find out that that is because they did not sign a treaty recently to stop using it. Apparently in Great Britain, we have signed that treaty, and if we keep to that promise, we do not use it. I then read another article which mentioned a humanitarian group in Baghdad that is going to investigate the use of white phosphorus and its effects on the human population. So there we are. You could read three separate reports and get a slightly different understanding of what is taking place. Now, I hadn't mentioned it earlier when I reviewed my own messages, but there is an article going around the internet which fully reports what Jimmy Carter said. And the article was a reprint from one in the LA Times from the 14th of November. And he called the article, "This Isn't the Real America." And Saint Germain thought this was worth mentioning. And I've read it, and I think it's one of the best articles talking about the position in America that I've read for quite some time. It's not very long, but it's very much to the point and very interesting. I did see a little bit about Nasara US, and I haven't mentioned that in my Nasara section, because in fact, apart from this little bit, I had nothing. But it was interesting that Doug, who runs the Nasara US site, mentioned that in 2 years, it takes some believing, although I don't doubt it 1 minute, that they've had 26 million visits to the site. Now, can you comprehend that? That is enormous, and it shows you that in really a relatively short number of years, how the news of Nasara has spread, and not only that, how many people have looked to follow it up. She said in this report that the CIA are trying to stop the Doug reports, and they have been carrying out hacking and also putting around disinformation about the site and also Nasara. And she said they get 540,000 attempts at hacking on the Dove site every month. And again, that is incredible. And you have to ask yourself, don't you, that if Nasara wasn't true, why would someone waste all that time trying to give you wrong information about it or trying to stop it from coming out? And clearly, there are some people that are trying to destroy it. Now, the Katrina flood, or the after effects of it, are not going to go completely away. And I read in our British press that the US government has launched a probe into whether there was corruption in the design, building, and maintenance of the levees that fell during Hurricane Katrina when the city of New Orleans was flooded. Now, I haven't seen that at all come up on the site. That is the website, of course, so maybe that little bit of information has yet to come out and circulate in the States. But I read that there is, as we wouldn't need much telling, a lot of pressure on Bush right now. And I saw, again, an article that talks of the House Government Reform Committee Chairman, Tom Davis, who on Friday last threatened to subpoena three members of the Bush Cabinet and White House Counselor Harriet Myers if they did not comply with a document request which was issued by his select committee on Hurricane Katrina. So although they're trying to stop the investigation from carrying out, you can see from that, fortunately, that the people who want information on it are not going to just let it rest and slip by. David Weiss circulated an email that referred to Dick Cheney. Apparently there is a lot of pressure on him, which is mounting. There are indictments regarding Cheney's ex-chief of staff, Lewis Libby, which we're aware of, and Harry Reid, who is the minority leader, commented that there is a dark cloud hanging over the White House, and he said the Vice President is sadly in the middle of the storm. While the only person so far indicted is Cheney's ex-chief of staff, Lewis Libby, there is apparently a lot being lined up against Vice President Cheney. In the article, Jeffrey Steinberg talks about the manipulation of intelligence to sell the war in Iraq, talks about the White House energy policy that puts big oil ahead of the American consumer and claims that Vice President Cheney is behind that, and also that he is behind the leaking of classified information to discredit White House critics. And he also says that Halliburton, contracting abuse, the list goes on and it goes on. Certainly America can do better than that. The article, which is titled, by the way, Cheney is on the way out, and this appeared in the Executive Intelligence Review on November the 18th, which is obviously an error because I'm reading it off as it, off the email now. I suspect maybe that's meant to be November the 8th. But anyway, regardless of that, the email is valid. And the article goes on to say that on November the 1st, Senator Reid pulled off a masterful parliamentary stroke by convening the Senate in a closed session to demand that the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence go forward with its Phase 2 investigation into how administration policymakers subverted the intelligence process to get their Iraq war. Now, the whole article covers a lot more than that, but I'll just leave it at those few extracts. I saw another article this week. I don't know what the origin is. It came to me from a friend, but the heading on it says, Senate hits Bush with vote of no confidence on Iraq. And it reads that the Senate on Tuesday, the 15th, demanded that President Bush provide a coherent Iraq strategy and pass an amendment calling for changes to the policy of the United States on Iraq and to require reports on certain matters relating to Iraq. And it reads that it is the sense of the Senate that, in order to succeed in Iraq, the administration needs to explain to Congress and the American people its strategy for the successful completion of the mission in Iraq. And it concludes, it's not often you see in our legislative halls here in Washington votes of no confidence on an administration. And that was stated by Harry Reid, who after the vote said, today you saw a vote of no confidence in the Bush administration's policy on Iraq. And Democrats and Republicans acknowledge that staying the course is not the way to go. So there we are. There's a lot of pressure coming from all different quarters now, and it's not a surprise to hear that George Bush is reacting to all that. Another short article that came my way was by Alec Jarre, who is a science correspondent, and his article was in The Guardian on Friday, November the 4th. And he is referring to a power source that turns physics on its head. And he says, it seems too good to be true. A new source of near limitless power that costs virtually nothing, uses tiny amounts of water as its fuel, and produces next to no waste. And if that does not sound radical enough, how about this? The principle behind the source turns modern physics on its head. Randall Mills, a Harvard University medic who also studied electrical engineering at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, claims to have built a prototype power source that generates up to 1,000 times more heat than conventional fuel. And independent scientists claim to have verified the experiment, and Dr. Mills says that his company, Blacklight Power, has tens of millions of dollars in investment lined up to bring the idea to market, and he claims to be just months away from unveiling his creation. The problem is that according to the rules of quantum mechanics, the physics that governs the behavior of atoms is an idea is theoretically impossible. Physicists are quite conservative. It's not easy to convince them to change a theory that is accepted for 50 to 60 years. And Jan Nortz, a theoretical physicist, said, I don't think Mills' theory should be supported. But there you are. I mean, I mention that because when our space friends come, as part of first contact, they have promised to introduce us to all new forms of energy, which are largely free. But it just shows that even maybe without that direct help, we have people on the Earth who have had the ability to find other means, and clearly they are ready to introduce these to us. Now, I will finally, this may be the final one, just come to one or two other items amongst the messages I had, as opposed to the articles that cover the general news. And there was one I mentioned last week about a vision that occurred to someone when they were having a shower. And somebody kindly emailed me, Aidan, and sent me a little bit more information. Doesn't tell us a great deal more, except this apparently happened on the 8th of September this year. And the person said that, and this is Spirit Eagle who experienced it, what we have seen was not a natural occurrence. And he was told that we are intervening in your desert state right now. We will not allow dear souls to be further traumatized and killed. Your white knight forces are on the ground, and we are ready to assist them if needed. The vision you saw in your shower, and we had good communication in the shower, do we not, was a true picture of what is going on in your Washington, D.C. The final preparations are being completed. There will be no glitches this time. So, there you are, it's just a little bit more information. Perhaps doesn't tell a great deal more, but nevertheless it is a little bit more, which is helpful. I might well now finish by reading extracts from one of Nancy Tate's messages, which came up on November the 4th from St. Germain, and he was talking of us, the human race, as the ones who came here millennia ago and set down a promise to each other and to the universe that we would play this game to the best, and in doing so, bring a new message of love to all creation. And he said, "This time I present it as a past history, for I speak to you now from your future. In this future, I am walking with you on the surface and within the hollow earth. I am reveling in the freedom and peacefulness that is present in our lives. There are all around us evidences of the triumph we made over the darkness that threatened to break down the door to oblivion. We made it to the door of everlasting light, and we did it in a way that was both uplifting and strengthening. We did it in the blink of an eye, and it is final in its scope. In that finality is expressed the end forever to the darkness that engulfs and entraps. Behind us forever is the forgetfulness of who we are and why we came here in the first place. Our legacy is that we shall always remember what we did and why we did it." He also spoke a bit later in the message of the inner earth and spoke of the wonderland of nature on Mother Earth. And he said that this is represented within the hollow earth. He goes on to talk of Mother Gaia herself and spoke of her glory by visiting the surface as a garden to be enjoyed and respected. And he said that we live within the mantle of her crust, and we will live within the hollow earth and allow the surface to retain its beauty and sanctity and tribute to the beauty of the Creator. He went on to say, "We will create our living spaces with our minds, with the capabilities that we possess to create anything that we desire for our comfort and enjoyment. Do you love to gaze up at the stars at night and revel in your cosmic family? You will be able to do that, for there is nothing that you cannot do. Your homes will speak of your own unique nature and creativity. They will reflect what is in your heart and soul." And then he more or less concluded it by saying, "I now prepare to return to your present time period. There is much to be done here, and as I return, I see the time periods leading back to your time. I see what you have experienced on the way to this future, and I watch as we all make this difference that leads to the perfection that beckons." There you are. That was a slightly more unusual message, I thought. But again, they're all very encouraging. Well, I had a lot more prepared, as I always do. And I've now reached the end of my time, so I must sign myself off now by thanking you all for being with me and hoping that you've enjoyed the articles I've handled, and I would say God bless you until we meet again. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.